Hey, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Mission Matters. My name is Adam Torres, and if you'd like to apply to be a guest on the show, just head on over to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to Apply. All right, so today my guest is Camille Bell. She's co-founder and CEO over at Poundcake. Camille, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Adam. I'm happy to be here.
All right, Camille. So great to have you here. And I'm excited to get into Poundcake today. And to get this kicked off, we'll start this episode the way that we start them all with what we like to call our Mission Matters Minute. So Camille, at Mission Matters, our aim and our goal is really to amplify stories for other entrepreneurs, other founders, really other people out there that have a mission that we feel needs to be heard. And I know you have a very special mission over at Poundcake. So maybe start off by telling us what mission matters to you. Like, tell us the mission of Poundcake.
Yes, the mission for Poundcake is to simply offer color cosmetics in a way that's never been done before, a way that's more personal to every user and customer. Currently, you know, aside from our company, a lot of color cosmetic companies will create one shade of a product and they'll expect it to look the same on all of us. And oftentimes it leaves darker skinned folks feeling left out within the beauty industry, you know, going to get a product and either not showing up at all because the color was only made to show up on lighter skin, it's not pigmented enough, or the offering is limited. And so it leaves folks with brown to darker skin having to buy multiple products, mixing it together to get the shade that was originally promised. So we're on a mission to eliminate that and just offer better quality color cosmetics.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that mission, Camille. And this is super interesting to me. And as we get further here, like, were you always an entrepreneur or was this one of your first ventures? Like, tell us a little bit more about when Camille became an entrepreneur, because this is amazing.
Yeah, that's kind of funny you ask that, which I don't really get asked a lot, that particular question. I would say yes, I've always been an entrepreneur. I think the first time I had my entrepreneurial run was when I was, 11 years old. I used to make these string bracelets.
That's amazing. So hold on. So I was the baseball card or the comic book guy. There was the candy guy, and then you would have been the girl with the bracelets. That's amazing. So we would have all been hanging out at lunch. Go ahead.
Yeah, I literally would buy string, different colored string thread, and I'd sit there in my room and making these bracelets. Like, I would do an hour a day and just be really diligent and making different cool designs. And then I would go around and I had this clear box.
Hold on, wait, I want to stop with one second there. So you were, use that word diligent. So you were, other people were out playing, doing whatever. And you're like, no, I got to make my bracelet.
Yes.
Like, what do you think made you do that? Like, what gave you that drive that young? Because me, I was playing around with cards. I didn't have to make anything. So I'm not going to claim I was ever being diligent. Go ahead.
I think at this particular moment, I just wanted more money. I didn't have the best childhood. And at a very early age, I had to pay for a lot of stuff. And so I was just always conscious of I hate to say, but at 11, I just had this anxiety of never having enough money, which is not what an 11-year-old should be thinking. And so I was just okay, what are ways that I can make money? And so this was one of the ways. And so I would sit in my room and I would do these bracelets. And then I bought this really nice plastic clear holder to put each of the different design bracelets. And then I would go around our cul-de-sac in the nearby neighborhood. I'd knock on people's doors and just hi, do you want to buy a bracelet? This one's 50 cents. This one's $1. And
that's amazing.
Yeah, and I would and people would buy them. I made $20.
So
and I was like, wow, I'm rich.
Yeah, you were.
Yeah.
No taxes. Come on, you were good. No, go ahead.
Yeah, so yeah, that was my first entrepreneurial run. And then, so this was my junior year. No, this is the summer of my sophomore year in college. I was always into fashion and I thought it'd be really cool to create a hub for student designers, as well as like small upcoming designers to have a platform to sell their clothing. And it just wasn't thought through. And it was called Monarchy. And I just couldn't afford to like keep it afloat. Like I think the Squarespace was like $24, which was like, it was a lot to me in college. Mm. And I just couldn't afford to pay that each month to keep this site up. But before I like stopped doing it, you know, I had to be really resourceful. And so like, I remember going to the Tyler School of Art, and I found an art student who made a really cool logo for me. And then I created the website through Squarespace. And then I had some of my friends like model.
Wow.
And I did some designs myself. So I could put it on the site. I would go to like Philly Fashion Week to meet other designers. And yeah, eventually just fizzled out. But that was like my second, I guess, business venture when I was in school. And then when it came to Pound Cake, it actually wasn't a sense of like, it's interesting. It wasn't like, oh, I'm doing this to make money. I was just really into makeup by this point, my senior year. And I was just feeling kind of defeated and just upset that I would go in to a, let's say Sephora, and I'd pick up a blush and it wouldn't show up on me. And then I'd go again. And like the hottest new trend, and it was like getting this lipstick, and it would look different on me than what was being advertised. And it just kept happening, and it made me feel really bad. And I started talking to my friends a lot about this. And then finally, one of my friends was like, why don't you just do something about it? Like, you keep, like, it's upsetting.
Do you remember which friend that was?
Yeah, it was my friend Katora.
Okay.
He was like, you should do something about it.
And that's awesome.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, I will. And so with this venture, I think I was more strategic, and I was just like, okay, you know, I tapped into my resources at Temple University is where I graduated from. And so I have literally just graduated, and so I was applying for jobs, but on the side, you know, I found out that Temple had entrepreneurial hub, where students, faculty, and alumni could go in and they would help you bring your business idea to fruition. And so I was advised to go there. I did. I met the director, and she was like, just like hit the ground running, was like, you need to think of a name. You need a website. You need business cards. You know, we got to file for trademarks. Like it was more, they were helping me to be, I guess, more legitimate. Whereas like with Monarchy, like I had the website, but I never filed like a trademark and did all that, the legal stuff to start your business. But with Pound Cake, I did. And it was thanks to, you know, where I graduated from, they had the resources to help me. And so that was a long-winded answer, but those were my entrepreneurial.
No, I don't think it's long-winded. I think it's the story, and that's what we want. We want the real. And how did you know, obviously, other than Katora having some pull in your life and firing you up to say, you go do it? Like, how did you know that this was going to be the one, like the next venture, something that you'd be? And the reason I asked this question, by the way, to preface, is that as entrepreneurs and as individuals with ideas out there, you know, they come and go. Like, I swear every other day I want to start another business. And I'm like, wait a minute, Adam, you have all these people. All this business. Like, wait, stop. Like, but I, you know, so to stay focused could be a challenge. But how did you know that this was going to be the one, that something that was going to take up a significant portion of your life and effort and, you know, energy?
I think this one hit home to me. I've always been interested and in love with makeup. I wasn't allowed to wear makeup in high school. And so when I got to college, like, I literally ran to the nearest store and bought as much makeup as I could. And
that's amazing.
Yeah, I've always loved makeup, always. And so
they're in that store like, what's going on here? No.
And yeah, I think at that point I just was like, it felt personal. Like, it really hurt my feelings that I couldn't wear what other folks were wearing who were lighter than me. I think it was personal. Like, it actually hurt my feelings. And I didn't want anyone else to feel like this. So I think that's probably the difference. And yeah, I think, yeah, because makeup has always been like a passion of mine. Like fashion definitely was when I got to college, I was exploring, but I've always loved makeup, like since I was in middle school. And so I think that was the difference, and just not wanting people to feel how I was feeling, like feeling left out. And so I guess that's the difference between like how much further I've gone with Pound Cake than Monarchy.
Yeah. Yeah. So talk to me a little bit about like your process and your methodology in creating the tones, the really just the product in general. So now you have this problem or this challenge because you can't find it yourself. And this is, I mean, this applies to many different industries. I interviewed somebody recently who actually have almost daily individuals that are solving problems for themselves. And then they find a way to help others that have that same problem. I think it's pretty basic, you know, fundamental of entrepreneur. So talk to me about like the creation of the product, the skin tones, like, and all what went into that.
Yeah. So in short, the process was really intense. It was
give us the real. We want the real, Camille. I was going to say it because you went to school for launching beauty products and you were a scientist and this. No, I'm just joking. Of course not. It's hard. First time on. You think I ever did a podcast before any of this? No, I didn't know.
Right.
Go ahead. I'll pick on myself there. I didn't know.
Right. So, I mean, the process was intense. You know, I just graduated. You know, I was 21 when I graduated college, and I literally had no one to like look to. So the Blackstone Launchpad at Temple, the incubator hub I was talking about earlier, they helped me print out these really shitty business cards, and they looked up like makeup conferences nearby. And the closest one was the first one I ever went to was called Makeup in New York. And they still have it. It's pretty much a 2 to 3 day vendor, but conference, so to speak, and a showing. And there's different vendors there of labs. They have different labs, different chemists, different ingredient suppliers. And you just pretty much go there to network. So I would go there, network with some people, get their information. And yeah, I just started Googling, like, what are the best cosmetic labs, like on the internet. And I would call the places and just, you know, talk to them about my idea. And a lot of times I couldn't afford them. You know, they were like, our minimum order quantity, which is MOQ, is 5,000 units per shade, right? Well, I was just starting. And so I wasn't going to launch with 20 to 30,000 shades. Like, you know, that's just like ridiculous. And even someone like Kylie Jenner, when she first launched Kylie Cosmetics, she launched with 15,000 units, like in total. That's someone who had millions of followers. And so they're telling me I need to be able to order 20 to 30,000 units. I just couldn't do that. And so I pretty much had to shop around. And so I finally landed on this one lab. It was a new lab. It was in Utah. I won't name them, but we started off the conversation. They let me know that they could definitely do what I was trying to do. They told me the pricing. They said I could own the formula for X amount. And so now I was like, okay, I have to raise money because you have to pay these labs, right? And so
yes, you do.
I didn't have any money. I was a broke college, like literally recent college grad. And so Blackstone Launchpad would look up pitch competitions in Philly for me to attend. And my first pitch competition, it was called the Idea Competition at the Fox School of Business at Temple. And I applied, I got in. I reached out to a friend who's now my co-founder, but I reached out to him asking if he could create a video for me, an animated video that explains exactly what we are doing. And so he created this really awesome video, and I pitched, and I ended up winning their Global Initiative Award for $500, which I was happy and ecstatic because it was our first pitch competition ever. And it's called the Idea Competition. So that was the validation I needed, I think, to continue.
What did that do for your confidence at that point? That had to be like, I mean, that must have been
best
$500 you've ever made in your life. Like that's
1,000%. Yeah. I was like, wow. Like to have my first pitch competition ever and win that award, I was like, wow. Okay. So this is legitimate, like what I'm doing is for real. I need to keep going. And yeah, it was $500. Like, I didn't have the best laptop at the time, so I used that money to buy my first Apple computer, and that was super exciting. And so I started applying for more pitch competitions to get more money, because $500 came and went. And 6 months later, or maybe it was like 4 months after winning that first award, I was on a train to Boston. And because we were semi-finalists in, at the time, it was called Bill Clinton's Holt Pitch Prize Competition for $1 million. And we were semi-finalists. And so I paid for two of my friends at the time to come up to Boston with me and pitch. And we didn't win. And it was really sad, but I learned a lot. And yeah, I just, for like a year, I just kept applying to pitch competitions. And the same thing would happen. I would get in. I would get to the final round. And each time, it's like the goalpost was moving. It was like, oh, we gave it to this person because you don't have a prototype. So then I found a prototype. And then I would get in the pitch competition. I would get to the final round. And I would sometimes see those same judges thinking, okay, I've had growth since the last time they saw me. I have a prototype now. And we still wouldn't win. And the same judge would come up to us and be like, we didn't pick you because you haven't launched yet. And I'm like, well, I need money to launch. I don't have money to launch. That's what I'm doing.
Entrepreneur's dilemma right there. Go ahead.
Yes. And so I just became sick of it, to be honest. It started feeling like I was getting in and I started becoming their token Black person that they were going to show off of, like, yeah, look how diverse we are. Because after the pitch competition would end, I would see that I would be in their marketing materials as a means to get other people to apply for the next year. But they were never picking me. Every pitch competition I was going to, they were using my image. And I just started feeling really shitty. And so my partner and I, we weren't getting anywhere. And we're like, you know what? We should just do a Kickstarter or Indiegogo campaign and raise money within our own community. Who gets it? And get money that way. And so I started reaching out to people who I heard had successful Kickstarter Indiegogo campaigns and who were not successful with their campaign. So I can learn from them as well. And I, you know, some people would charge me like $100 an hour to meet with them, which was, again, still a lot of money for me as a like broke recent college grad. And I would meet with them at lunch, or I would treat them to lunch using my own money, and just, I would have a notebook and I would just take all the feedback. And this took about 6 months. Like, I flew to Atlanta once to meet with the woman. I took her out to lunch because she raised a good amount of money through Indiegogo. And yeah, so after about, I would say like 4 or 5 months meeting with people very frequently and gathering data, I maxed out my credit card. It was like $1,200 to attend the Talia Wajid hair show. It's like a big hair show in Atlanta. My thinking was, okay, it's not cosmetics, it's hair, but I know a lot of Black and brown women are going to be there, and I can gather emails. So when we do finally launch our Indiegogo campaign, it'll help us get to our goal quicker. And so again, maxed out my credit card, flew to Atlanta to do this trade show. Mind you, I'm working full time. So I did I took a day off of work, flew in, and we bought slices of pound cake. And that was a way, because we didn't have product like everyone else there. But we were like, okay, we need a way to draw people in. Food. Everyone loves food. And
yeah, they do.
Pound
that
cake.
Was smart. That was a great idea. I would have been
Thank
there
you.
Like, what's this pound cake? I want
exactly.
some.
Exactly.
They're like, well, Adam.
Yeah. And we walked away with, I think it was like 800 emails. It was like between 600 and 800 emails,
wow.
which is solid. So that was like April, May. And, you know, we kept just updating people on our Instagram and whatnot. You know, the feedback I had gotten from folks was, you need to plan, if you want to be successful in your Indiegogo campaign, you need to plan at least half a year in advance. And so, yeah, I would just keep everyone updated. And then I think by like July, I ended up picking, okay, September 25th, we're going to go live with this campaign. And it's only going to be for 30 days. Create that sense of urgency. Mm-hmm. We can have a launch party you know, I was working at a co-working space and I pitched to them to let me use their rooftop for an event. And I reached out to local folks, vendors to get catering, to get alcohol there, just make it a big splash and set up laptops. We had giveaways. And so, September rolls around and we launched a campaign and figures the first day the website crashed.
Of course, that has to happen. I mean, I feel like that wouldn't be a good story for this podcast if it was like, oh, and that, no, I'm just, of course right. That has that for all the entrepreneurs. I'm making light, obviously, of it right now, but for all the entrepreneurs out there, it's like, oh my gosh, of course that happened, because that's what, you know, that's what happened. And you pushed on though, right?
Right. And I was on the floor just crying. I was so disappointed. And we reached out to our rep at Indiegogo. We're like, what is going on? You guys knew we were going to be launching today. Like, what is happening? And it sucked. However, we still, within that first week or the first 6 days, we met 30% of our goal. I think the feedback I got, and based on my research 6 months prior, was that the campaigns on Indiegogo or Kickstarter that are the most successful get 30% of their goal, I think, within the first 3 to 5 days. And so we were able to do that still, despite this debacle. And by the third week, we were just we had tapped into all of our resources. You know, we went to the press. We had a big launch party. I'm emailing everybody that I had known at this point. But my network's pretty small at this point, because I had just turned 23. I just turned 23, 4 days after we launched the campaign. So I'm 23. My network's not that big. We were even on the news and invited press. And at this point, I think by the last day, we had raised a little over 50% of our goal. So I was just trying to tell myself, okay, well, I'm still proud of us. We still raised over $10,000. $20,000 was our goal. But, you know, I was just justifying it in my head. I was able to get this from everybody. And the hours are counting down, I refresh it, and all of a sudden it jumps from a little over 10,000 to over 20,000.
Wow.
And I'm like, what the? And I call my partner and I'm like, oh my God. Oh my gosh. And he's he looks at me and we just start screaming. And we're like, well, how did this happen? Like, what happened? And we see this guy. This random guy, I think his name was Alan, that donated $10,000. And we're like, what? And I put him in Google and I'm like, nothing's really coming up. It's just this white man that says he works in Silicon Valley. And we're like, what is going on? But we're freaking out because the hours, we have an hour or 2 hours before the campaign was going to close. And we did it. We met our goal. But we were like, who is this guy? And so we then got an email shortly after, this guy saying hey guys, we've been watching your campaign. I'm an executive at QuickBooks and we're doing this campaign right now where we've been looking for successful Indiegogo and Kickstarter campaigns to donate to help them get past their goal. And we've been watching you guys since you launched. And you guys got past a certain amount that, so we were able to help you guys close it out. And we want to fly you to California and give you guys like Apple computers. And we were like, oh my gosh.
Wow.
It was wild. It was wild. And so then the news broke that we actually surpassed our campaign. And of course that helped. It's one of those things where you need people to believe in you when you're not successful. And then when you are, that's when the support comes. So it's everyone was oh, I need you to get there, blah, blah, blah. Even though they didn't donate. That's how it goes.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. But it made a big splash. And then it was easier, a little bit easier, I should say, to get more funding. So once we hit that goal, there was another pitch competition at Temple where her name's Lori Bush. She was the former CEO at Rodman and Fields. And she graduated from Temple's Fox School of Business. So every year, I believe, or at least at the time, she was donating like $50,000 to Temple's entrepreneurial program. So she had a grant. And so when we pitched, we were like, hey, we just raised over $20,000 from our community. And from that point, we were awarded another $10,000. So now I had $30,000 and I'm like, okay, or a little over $30,000. And this I could take to a lab. And yeah, we found our first lab. It was in Utah. It's $7,500 for them to create everything for the R&D process, just the R&D process, and to own the formula. So long story short, we worked with them for a year and it was terrible. It was absolutely terrible. I don't think they knew what they were doing. We didn't know what we were doing either, because had we known what we know today, or even like 4 years ago, we would have never went with them, because their expertise was more so in deodorants and body care. And I think because they were a new lab, they were just hungry for business. So they told us, yeah, we can create a liquid lipstick. They had never created a liquid lipstick before. So it was disappointing. That was $7,500 just down the drain. And so what we did was we learned from our mistakes and we found another lab. This time the lab was in Canada. And this time around, we were like, okay, let's be smarter. Let's ask them for samples first before we go with them. They sent us samples of their liquid lipstick and we were like, okay, these are good enough where we feel comfortable that they could create something for us, like completely custom. And we gave them what we currently had. And so they worked off that formula. They did a better job, but they were just still shady. They were very shady. And, you know, we were almost there. Then COVID happened, March of 2020. Yeah. And everything shut down, including the labs. And then I don't know, what people don't discuss is like everyone started, rightfully so, wanting to be more, I guess, health conscious in the sense of, or hygiene conscious, I should say. And everyone was trying to make money off of hand sanitizer. So our lab switched from, I guess, helping clients like us to, they were like, we're focusing on creating hand sanitizer. And we were like, okay, so where does this us? Yeah. So by the end of the summer, we got to a place where the formula was pretty good. And we were like, okay, so we sent our vials because we were going to do production with them. And I shipped everything to Canada. And I had just called to get a check-in about something. And the owner of the lab was like, hey, did anyone not tell you? And I was like, tell me what? And he was like, yeah, we're no longer going to be working with Pound Cake. And I was like, what? What do you mean? Like, I just was taken aback because I wasn't even called. I was just calling to see if they had gotten our vials yet delivered. And they were just like, yeah, we have a bigger client coming in and we just, you know, we're just changing the trajectory. And we pleaded with them. We were like, can we at least get the formula? We've been working with you guys for a year. Can we please get the formula? He said yes. The formula never came. And we kept bugging him and bugging him to the point where he did send something over, but it was complete bullshit. The numbers didn't make sense. You know, in chemistry, everything has to equal 100%. Yeah. And the formula did not equal 100%.
When did it work? Like, let's get to that part.
When did work?
Yeah, when did it work?
Well, we went to two more labs. This is devastating. This time, we were like, hey, let's be even smarter. Let's work with two different labs at one time. Yeah. Just in case something like this happens. And that's what we did. And the one lab dropped us. But luckily, because we were working with two labs simultaneously, the other lab had gotten a lot closer to what we wanted. And we were still able to own the formula, et cetera. And so finally, yes, we found the place that...
Finally, I was about to say...
Exactly. A lot of people don't know that. It was intense.
I mean, when I think about, because a lot of entrepreneurs, I mean, just saying, like, when we have these ideas, and it's like, I love that you broke down the story, though, because what happens is sometimes in the middle of those, like you could have quit so many times. You could have quit on the after the first lab, after the second. I mean, at this point, COVID hit, like all these things for you to finally get to where you're at today with a product that, you know, people can purchase on the website and the company up and running. Like that's not an easy feat. As you're saying right now, especially competing in that market and otherwise, and for trying to create something new and something that serve an area or a niche that's not been served before, that's not the way that you feel it should be. So, I mean, really, I think it's a great story. Like overall, I'm listening to this and I'm like, oh my gosh. And one of the reasons I like sharing these stories and bringing them to my audience is just because, you know, there's some entrepreneurs out there that might be going through that right now where they're like, oh man, and it doesn't have to be just within the beauty niche. It could be many other niches, right? They might be thinking like, oh, you know, but hearing these stories, I feel is so meaningful because it's part of the journey. And I feel like it's what keeps us all going. It keeps me going every day hearing them. But that being said, Camille, so we're about out of time for this particular episode, but I want to give you the opportunity to leave a website, social media, anything else that so that my audience can come and check out the products and check out the line.
Yes, of course. Thanks so much for having me. You can find us, purchase our products at poundcake.com, or you can visit your local nearby Ulta Beauty store and check us out in person. If you're in New York, California, Texas, Boston, you can also check us out at Credo Beauty or credobeauty.com. And you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Poundcake and on TikTok at Poundcake Official.
Fantastic. And for everybody listening, just so you know, we'll put the links in the show notes so that you can, you know, pick up some product. Of course, we want to support our entrepreneurs out there. And also, speaking of supporting our entrepreneurs out there, if this is your first time listening to Mission Matters and you haven't hit that subscribe button yet and you need an invitation, a personal specialized invitation, this one's just for you. Hit that subscribe button. And if you've been listening to the show for a long time and you haven't left a review yet, hey, we sure would appreciate that review. We appreciate the give back there. And Camille, again, thank you so much for coming on today and sharing that story. And I look forward to watching the continued success of Pound Cake and to continue to follow your journey. So again, thank you so much for sharing that with me and my audience.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.